This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with security shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What's the word, y'all? Welcome back to Called Game. Now, today we got a very special guest, one of the kings of NBA Twitter, and according to Mashables, number 17 of must follows in the NBA world, Josiah Johnson. Welcome to the show, man.
Boys, so focus, you notice my trade day. From the logo like Dane Bay. Tell him I gotta go and get the money. Good, cause the money won't pay me. If anybody really think they no balling, well, please tell him come to Bay, mate. Or you can go to YouTube and search Called Game, watching an HD, y'all.
And that's Game.
First of all, I hit up the writer of the list to tell him thank you, but I wasn't happy with that 17. I didn't see you on the list.
I wasn't on the list.
There was a few people I didn't see on the list, and I was like, ooh, I don't know if I could really rock with this list. So I definitely told him thank you, but I couldn't really promote it with as is. I think the rankings were a little skewed and a little off. But
they had it broken into different sections, right? So it was like the must follows, like Woj and Shams, and then it's like the funny dudes, right? It's the funny dudes, and of course you should be at the top of that list.
I appreciate you, bro. I mean, I'm just trying to get in where I fit in, but I look at Woj and it's like he shouldn't even be on the list because everybody knows when he
facts
100 people gonna retweet it, so you don't even really need to follow him. You're gonna see it's gonna show up in your timeline, but he's a legend. There's a lot of cool legends on that crew. Like I said, a lot of people who should have been, but the game is a game. You're out here doing it, you know, a million strong.
A little bit,
You got an army, so you know, it's all good.
Appreciate that. So I want to start off talking about that Twitter journey, because like I said, you're one of the kings out there. I mean, it's meme left and right. It's just funny tweet after funny tweet. Even today, I know this is being posted later. You had the KD tweet that went kind of viral. So what is the process for coming up with those tweets?
Well, I feel like now, man, I've been doing it so long, I'm kind of like a Yoda, just master at it. So I can visualize and see the memes before they happen. So when I saw the KD Shannon Sharp thing, I could just wake up and see it, be like, all right, I got the perfect meme for this thing. But it was a long process. I've been, you know, been around social for such a long time, even like 2008, 2009 YouTube days. We were posting off-kilter comedy and voiceover videos and doing a bunch of random stuff. So I saw a world in it, man. I just like to entertain people, and I do a lot of stuff in my regular life. It's kind of like my, you know, I get to be Superman and turn from Clark Kent to Superman on social. So I'll be working in writers' rooms and doing serious scenes and stuff, and then I'll be out there just cracking jokes and trying to just find the funny, man, try to keep people entertained, especially throughout this pandemic. See, man, just a lot of people were down on their luck in hard times, so if I can just be a little, like, release valve for them to get some comedy, get some entertainment, get some humor, that may be the only funny thing they see in the day. And I also now use it as a way to not break news, but a lot of people find the news out. Like, Woj will tell the story, then I'll offer my interpretation of it.
Right.
And people will hear that before Woj is. And it kind of cracks me up that they heard the joke before the actual news story. So a lot of times, like, wait, so you got traded? And it's like, I thought y'all knew that.
Because I'll take that over the news story. Because, I mean, okay, there's an initial tweet from, like, Woj or Shams that'll tell you X player got traded. And then they drop the whole article. I don't know if anybody that's reading the whole article,
yeah,
right?
For sure.
It's like we get the trade, we get the reactions, we get the memes, we get the people that's breaking it down. And it's like NBA Twitter is such a cool and fun place, but it's also got his little bad parts, and I know you know of the bad parts as well. So
good, bad, the ugly, and that's a lot of people like tell me about getting in the game, and they want to do this and do that, and it's like that's great, but the mental health component, just like for the players, it's the same thing on the social side, because you got all these people, you can create a Twitter account in 30 seconds,
right?
Whoever, you know, if I want to hate on Kenny,
it's out there.
F Kenny, whatever, 8826672 and the only things I'm doing every time you post, I got something negative to say. So you got to look past it. And I tell people, I see everything that comes in my feed. I mean, every single, somebody talking shit, somebody trying to clown, somebody whatever, I see all of it. I just make a mental note of it because I know I'm going to cross paths with these people at various points in life. And, you know, it could be whatever they want. I think a lot of times, even you look at kind of players, like I'm good friends with Matt Barnes, and I'll see people come and Matt will respond, then it's like, oh,
yeah.
Even like Shannon Sharp with KD today, Shannon came through, and I rock with Shannon Sharp, but he came through with the fake quote, he got,
yep.
Like some of us do online at times, and instead of just apologizing, it's like, yeah, KD's a man, like if you're gonna come at him, and it's some bullshit, of course he's going to come back. Is KD my favorite player? No, not until he comes to the Lakers. I'm a LeBron guy, but I can respect, you know, all those angles. But, man, I think for me it's just the world, the game, and just the hustle. Man, NBA Twitter is such a fun spot because something will break, and then people will be talking about some shit that had nothing to do with that. Mm-hmm. Like somebody,
right.
You know, I've seen Kwame Brown catch strays off of an article that had literally nothing to do with him, or a news story breaking, and then it turns into Kwame or whatever.
Right.
You know, I like to always look and kind of dig deeper, like who else is impacted by this? Like the Sixers grab somebody. Mm-hmm. How does Austin Rivers feel at that moment? That his pops not even rocking with him like that to bring him on the squad. So just trying to have the clips ready, and like I said, try to keep people entertained. But I'm always amazed at how what starts as whatever the story is, it'll now turn into 20 other different things. You'll see somebody random trending that had nothing to do. Like, why is J.R. Smith trending? It's like, because somebody made a soup joke about something else, and now his name is just out there. But it's a crazy world.
I think what you do so well when it comes to the Twitter account is getting all aspects of a joke, right? I feel like there are so many people out there that maybe don't even remember the soup thing with J.R. Smith. So what are some, like, under the radar, like, moments in NBA world or the NBA Twitter that you can think of off the top of the dome? Other than, like, that soup thing, I mean, I haven't forgot about it, but, like, you mentioned it, I was like, it brought back a memory.
I mean, there's just so much stuff. I mean, from Temecula all the way, you know, through, like, you just look at the various incarnations of social and Twitter, and, you know, guys will pop up and they'll be a thing for a couple of years and they'll just disappear or whatever. Yeah. Or, you know, somebody's account gets suspended. It's kind of like if the people like that person, it's the heartache and pain. And I think of, like, Cryptic No One. He's had, like, 15, 20 different accounts. But I feel like every time the account pops up, it got, like, 300,000 followers right away.
They clap him quick. I feel like he's been through it a lot.
Zach Fox, another one. Yep. Like, Zach will just drop heat all the time. And it's just like, dude, you can't be doing this shit. I'm just looking like, please, man, we need you.
Do you see it as, like, a competition? Kind of, when it comes to, like, the meme, like, because you want to be, maybe you don't. When I do what I do, I want to be the king of that, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So there's a little competition.
Well, I think about somebody like yourself, and it's like you've been able to ascend because you have all these resources and tools available, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you might have 5-10 years ago tried to go to networks and be like, look, I want to do what I'm doing now. And they would have been like, eh.
Right.
But you go do it now, those same spots are like, oh, we rock with you, we roll with you. So for me, it was kind of a situation where I just wanted the ability to get my name and my voice out there and really just the humor. I grew up playing basketball, played at UCLA, so we spent time in those locker rooms with a guy like Matt Barnes or a guy like Trevor Ariza or guys like DeJon Thompson, Seth Bozeman, whoever. You got to go at these dudes. Like, this is a daily thing. Like, everybody's kind of clowning, doing whatever. And it's, you know, a dog-eat-dog type of situation. So you got to be able to hold your own, crack jokes, be able to take jokes. And I think I've just now applied that to social and Twitter. And for me, it's like there's enough serious stuff going on. So whenever something happens, I'm always just trying to, like, what's the funny, what's the joke?
Right.
And I feel like we as, like, a black community use humor as a coping mechanism.
For sure.
So whatever the story is that's going on, it could be anything. I'm going to find a joke and find a way to just make people laugh and find, like, the lighter side of it.
I respect that. You mentioned something that we're going to transition to. That was the UCLA days, man. What was the journey from where you grew up? We're going to talk about you and your pops a little bit later, but get into UCLA.
So, yeah, obviously, Pops was able to really lay that foundation. My older brother, Chris, went there, too. And I think they were the first father and son to win a national championship at the same school. Maybe the only.
Yeah.
But I was a ball boy on that 95 squad. So I actually went to elementary school on UCLA's campus, a school called UES. So I spent my whole pretty much life there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was at the fourth, fifth, sixth grader after school. I would go over to the arcade. I remember have, like, $5 worth of quarters in my pocket, go to the arcade on campus and just go hit it. Or they had a bowling alley back then. All that stuff has now since changed. But and just go be on campus, see a guy like Charles O'Bannon or Ed or Tyus, who's my cousin, just around there, man. And just being in that world in the summertime when my older brother would play and then eventually myself. So I ended up growing 6'7". And I think I was like a USA Today honorable mention All-America coming out of high school as a senior at a school called Montclair Prep in Van Nuys with a bunch of legends. All types of legends went there. But was able to, you know, Steve Lavin was a coach at the time. Lav rocked with me, offered me a scholarship. But for me, it was a tremendous experience and ability. But then I step on campus and I'm going up against Dan Gazurich, who was Gazurich when we were there, but he's like 6'11", like 240.
Yeah,
You know, I have to go up with Ray Young, who's just a physical specimen, 6'5", but, you know, in slam. And I'm seeing all these dudes and I'm reading their slam diaries. My roommate, TJ Cummings, my freshman year, he's like 6'9". Terry Cummings is his pops. And our pops, actually, it's funny, got traded for each other in the NBA from, I think his pops with the Clippers, my dad's with the Bucks, and they made that trade. So we had met kind of throughout our lives, and then to be freshmen on campus together, but he's like 6'9", rock, just yoke. I'm looking at all these dudes like, shit, I mean, I probably don't have a really long future in this hoop thing. Maybe I can go overseas playing like a B league or something, but I learned at that moment, like, I got to figure something out. So entertainment, comedy, that was always something I was really good at, keeping the mood light with the squad, you know, wherever we would go, we'd go on road trips, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. If we were down, you know, brighten the spirits, we were up, brighten the spirits. Just always try and keep everybody loose, fresh, and just kind of keep the mood as light as possible.
You're one of the people that turned like a college career of maybe not getting a lot of PT into some success. Mark Titus is another guy. I don't know if you're aware of him. He turned from being the bench warmer to a best-selling author and podcaster. So, like, that was one of my questions. Like, when was the moment you were like, okay, maybe hoops as a player ain't a thing, but I want to work in this realm of social or media?
I think for us, it was my crew. It was Ike Williams and Quinn Hawkins, who were my boys on the squad. We used to sit on the end of the bench together. And for us, we just would figure out, because, you know, you sit on the bench 3 hours, you know, if we're playing a big game, we're not going to get in the game.
Right.
But for us, it's like, all right, well, there's like 20 cameras here. Let's figure out the angles. We can figure out ways to get on screen. So if a guy shoots, we know the right angle to jog to get our face on or whatever it may be. Or, you know, the red lights during timeouts, whatever. If they're filming the huddle, one of us might turn and act like we're looking at something, but really we're just trying to get that airtime.
I always wonder about the bench mobs like that, you know, the celebrations. So it's all active of like, we gonna get our time on TV for sure.
I remember my last game, we played Texas Tech in the tournament. And after halftime, it was like, shit, we probably not getting this game. So we all just took our warm-ups off. It was like, shit, at least somebody's watching at home. They might think we got in and got some playing time. Because that was always a distinguisher. You look at the end of the bench, those guys are still full, whatever. So I think we pulled our joints off. But for us, I mean, you think, you know, you're playing with these guys and got the opportunity to go to a school like UCLA, just a tremendous legacy and to be a part of the brotherhood. And it's really just getting where you fit in. But a lot of those guys like my pops and other people in that space, Kareem, Bill Walton, all these guys have gone on to have successful careers in broadcasting and acting and doing other stuff. So you're in LA, you're in Hollywood, you're just in that world. You got all types of, like, Jaleel White, who's a close friend of mine, who plays Steve Urkel, obviously on Family Matters, but he's front row at games and, you know, chopping it up with you. It's like, yeah, you just kind of get immersed in this world where you kind of just crave and desire and want to be a part of it.
When it comes, going back to UCLA, was there ever a moment where it wasn't UCLA? Or was it like, because my pops, my big bro went there, it's always going to be UCLA no matter what? Because I'm, like you said, you were honorable mention McDonald's All-American, so I'm guessing you had offers for more than just UCLA.
Yeah, no, so I honorable mention USA today. I like to, because I don't want anybody watching to be like, you know.
A little bit different, just
but,
a little bit.
But on the internet, they can go and they pull, so I always try to make sure I don't want anybody, I keep my mental health right. So I'm like, he wasn't McDonald's, he was ass, whatever. Like, but, yeah, for me, honestly, like, UCLA came in late in the game, so I was getting recruited heavy by Xavier at that point, who Coach Skip Prosser, who later went on to Wake Forest but passed away, but he was recruiting me heavy. So I was kind of like, I want to get out of LA just because my family's here. I spent my whole life here, and I want to just go somewhere random where I could just hoop and do whatever. But UCLA came along. I took a visit, and it was just like, Ray Young, Sean Farnham, where my host Sean Farnham, Ty Ramazar, just, you know, guys that I'm still close and friends with. And after the first night, I was like, shit, I'm here. Like,
automatic,
you know,
right?
My brother, I mean, I knew all these guys. Me and my brother are like 7 years apart. So he was a senior when, like, Earl Watson and Baron Davis were freshmen, and Todd, who was on that squad as well. But so now I became a freshman when these guys were all seniors.
Right, so it's a little overlap.
So Earl's a senior. Earl, you know, like, to this day, the greatest leader I think I've ever played with.
Oh, wow.
He embodies a captain, a point guard leader, just the way he had the ship running on that squad. Mm-hmm. And he was an extension of Steve Lavin on the court. But just seeing all these dudes who I used to look up to, like, I'm going to my brother's games looking at these dudes, like, I'm a 14-year-old flabby kid at that point, to now being 18, like, hanging out with Earl and, like, being in Earl's PT Cruiser, freestyling and doing, I mean, I'm just saying, like, things that would be going on. It's like, it was an incredible experience. So I wouldn't have traded for the world, and I'm so happy that I got the opportunity to do it, even though it didn't, from a basketball standpoint, work out as much as I wanted it to.
You play with a ton. You just mentioned some of them. A ton of players that went on to the league, man.
Yeah.
A ton of them. Aaron Aflalo.
Yep.
I mean, you had a 4-year career there, so you had some players that went early, a little bit later. Aaron Aflalo. You just mentioned Earl Watson, who had like the shortest leash of all time when it comes to like NBA coaches. Like, they got him out of that though real fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Grimy. I mean, I'm happy for the Suns and where they are now, but you look at that situation, and he was up for the UCLA job, and the alumni kind of rallied behind him basketball player-wise, mm-hmm. and kind of got this weird thing from the other alumni at UCLA, and it's like, this dude coached in the NBA.
Yeah.
He was running a successful AAU program at that time. It's a guy like Earl comes into your house, you're going to play for him just because right. he's done everything. He's a 14-year NBA vet, you know, play with everybody you could think of. Like, if that's your goal is to get to the NBA, it's a guy you want to be around and be with. But, yeah, it was janky. They did him dirty, but the game is the game. And, you right. know, he's moved on. I'm happy for him.
One of the things we like to do here is called Home Court Dictionary, okay. Where we talk about our guests' is home court. And, of course, you've talked about a lot. L.A. is your home, always has been. And every place on the map has their own style, own terms, own way of play. I'm from Chicago, as you may know. So when it comes to our players, we're usually gritty, talk a lot of shit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Good defensive players. What do you think is the mold of the L.A.-based basketball player?
I mean, L.A. has this kind of light-skinned tinge to it where, you know, we're good-looking. We got the best hair, best jumpers. The right. weather's the best. So everybody, but it's a burden that we carry as yeah. hoopers in L.A. And it's just kind of a style, but we can play year-round outside. So you go somewhere like a New York or Chicago. Like, I've been to Chicago All-Star Weekend. It's like, it was even walking from the subway or whatever, the metro, CTA, whatever it's just yeah. called, to the hotel. It was like 2 blocks. I literally froze my ass off. Like, yeah. like I can't deal with this yeah. shit. I want to get back to L.A. But I think our hoopers, that's kind of just the world we go in. So we can play all year long, play anywhere, indoor, outdoor. So we just pick up a lot of, you know, a lot of great tendencies. But guys, just, it's funny, too, because we get this kind of light-skinned, soft, pretty boy thing. I saw what you said. LA in the tournament this year mm-hmm. when they're going up against Alabama, whatever, you guys are soft. Then we flipped the Gonzaga. Now, you know, we're not getting no calls. We're the tough guys now all of a sudden. But I think it's just that world. So people kind of have this negative view kind mm-hmm. of LA guys. But if you look at the league across the board from decade to decade, who's running things? You know, the UCLA and these 11 natties, yeah. you know, who's yeah. got the most players in the league? Like, we're always up there. And it's LA dudes always on roster. So this is a question we always ask too, because you got the East Coast, West Coast beef. I think that's always been a thing. And I know Chicago hoopers, of course.
We want a little bit of love.
I mean, you know, you got Q Rich and just the, you know, D Wade and those dudes. I remember I was at UCLA, my roommate's TJ Cummings. D Wade's freshman year, I think he had a red shirt.
Okay.
We're on campus talking about hoopers, and the way I saw TJ talk about D Wade, it was like, damn, this dude might be pretty good. So to see him, but he's, I mean, y'all got to check for my boy Dwayne Wade. Like,
right.
he's at Marquette, he's about to kill. Like, and we're just like, whatever, dog. Like, we're not really feeling it. But then, you know, you just see that world. But for us, as L.A. hoopers, we just kind of, you know, try to really lay that foundation. I think New York, they always feel like they're the mecca of everything. Like, mm-hmm. they invented this, they invented that. And maybe, but we took it and elevated it to a whole nother level. So, right. you know, when you look at where did Pac wanted to be, where did, you know,
right.
Snoop, Dre, what's really going down is L.A. for sure.
Yeah, we had Metal World Peace on the show. And, of course, he's a New York guy. And that was definitely the tone he gave us. Like, man. We did all of that, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, we're talking about sure. Queensbridge. We got this hooper, this hooper, this hooper, you know, the greatest AAU team of all time. I'm not saying he's wrong in that, but I think everybody that we're going to have on the show is going to have a similar sentiment. It's like, my city is the best. You know what I'm saying? My city is the best.
New York's got a great hoop legacy, but they also like to just they overrate everything, like the Knicks, everything that goes on. Like, you know, they're like, they get, you know, five seed and it's like, we got to shut the city down. We're having a parade. Championships, Lakers, UCLA, Dodgers. It's yep. just something that LA exudes. And we rock with New York, but like I've said, like I was actually born in Trenton, New Jersey, and I spent most of my life in LA. I wouldn't trade it for the world. All the New York dudes moved to L.A. Mm-hmm. In the summertime, what's cracking? Everybody's in L.A. So
right.
we're the spot to be. Obviously, the Lakers, everything that's going on. LeBron James. LeBron could have went to the Knicks. He right. could have went to the Nets.
Yeah.
He had to let KD do that because, yeah. you know, he's coming to L.A. That's where dudes want to be.
Okay, so again, Lakers fan. That moment, because you go from the Kobe era to Hard Tank. We talking about... Yeah. Who's on those rosters? Xavier Henry, Robert Sacre-led teams to Bron signing to the Lakers. How was that moment for you as a Laker fan going through, what, 5 years of rebuilding for no rebuild?
So I grew up, my pops played for the Clippers, grew up a Clippers fan, but LeBron James for me was, you know, in 2003 he came to UCLA, he was a senior in high school, he used our locker room, mm-hmm. I think we were on a road trip somewhere. I look at some Sports Illustrated photos a couple weeks later that come out. He used my locker. So I knew at that point, like, LeBron had great taste. Like, you know, he's a smart dude. He already he surveyed the 15 lockers. Like, I'm going to fuck with this dude. So we've always had a connection. But, you know what I mean? Like, for me, when he made that choice, like, it's been tough being a LeBron fan. We had to go to Cleveland, Miami. Mm-hmm. You know, we're comfortable living the life. Like, yeah. we didn't really need to dip back. But I get he wanted to go back and win a ring. But the day he announced he'd be coming to Lakers, like for me as a former Clippers fan, it was amazing because Clippers obviously marred in controversy. Donald Sterling, yep. My pops played through the Donald Sterling years. So mm-hmm. Clippers fans from that time really have like a Stockholm syndrome. Like we support the team, but knowing that the owner could give a shit and really didn't want us to be successful, right? Literally like said, I don't care. Like we could suck. Like I'm not paying any bread, whatever. So to see Steve Ballmer come in and get that ship right and get Kawhi and PG has been awesome. But to see LeBron come his first year, and there was a lot of hate. Obviously, the Warriors were dominating the league with their pseudo dynasty. You know, I mean, you know, KD era.
I get you that.
I know a lot of Warriors fans get mad when you hear that. But I ask them who has the most Finals MVPs in Warriors history. And it's Kevin Durant, so it was the KD era. I mean,
I get you that.
You know, when it was Shaq and Kobe, it was the Shaq era. Shaq was winning Finals MVPs. Kobe was doing his thing, but that's just what it is. So to see that, you know, to see that kind of having to deal with Warriors fans feeling themselves and try to flex and just act tough and just have this great stretch where they lose to the Raptors, I believe in 2019, LeBron comes and wins in 2020. And now, you know, him and AD are obviously injured, but once they get back together, we know what it is. We're not tripping on Steve's or anything like that.
You're not worried about the Brooklyn Nets hypothetically 7-game series in the finals?
No, they don't D up enough, and I think there's only one ball. Kyrie's kind of on his spiritual. Every week is kind of some different. You know, he reminds me of like, you know, Sharif from Menace to Society. Like, you know, he's sitting on the cooler telling you, we are tropical people and all this other good shit. But and Harden, I think, is playing at an MVP level. And when he's had the squad to himself or with Kyrie, you know, without the big three, he's done his thing. But they don't lock up. Mm. You know, the Lakers without LeBron and AD are locking up. Still, I want to say top defensive rating.
It's them and the Knicks, 1 and 2. And without AD and LeBron, it's just
still
ridiculous.
Locking up. Yeah. Caruso, whoever is out there, McKinney, like, you know, dudes that don't get run or coming in locking up. So I think, you know, LeBron and AD are built for this. They only had the 71-day layoff, which I understand the league wants to make their money. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we all work and get money off the league, too, so we all want that to go on as well. Like, I run my numbers up better when the league is, you know.
Same here.
That's just how the game works. Yeah. So, but also, I've seen this happen during the lockout, I want to say in 2011, where guys came back. You saw a lot of injuries. I believe, like, D. Rose, I think, ended up, you know, messing his shit up. And just guys suffering these ACLs.
Yeah, that's the year.
You know, but these badass injuries, and it's like you can't, you know, these dudes are on a routine and a schedule. You already asked them to go to the bubble, you know, change their whole lives for 3 months. And, you know, from all the stories I heard there, it's like, you know, you're in prison at Disneyland. It's great. Like, but anywhere, you know, you go to Disneyland for 3 months, like, shit, take my ass home. I'm not trying to sit in this little hole. And I think Rondo or somebody said something about the rooms. It's like, look at those rooms. Not for these dudes.
Rondo. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And everybody shitting on him. I'm like, no, not for Rondo. You know, like,
not for what they're used to at all.
Not even LeBron and his whatever. I know he had the
little penthouse up top. He didn't want nobody to see it, but it was
he was discreet with his joints, but even him is like, this is not, you know, this is okay. This
not, especially not for like, what, 3-4 months that they were really there. You know, you could take a weekend trip. But
I'm looking at JaVale's room. It's like, you got this 7-foot dude in this with the two beds together. That's not comfortable. They can't,
at all.
You know, I've done vacations. That's why you want to bring your ass home after a couple of days. But just to have those dudes do that, then 71-day layoff, didn't get to have a parade, didn't even really get to turn up with the Dodgers. We, you know, we're in the heat of the pandemic. We can't even turn up and celebrate. Obviously, everything, you know, went on with Kobe and his tragic passing, and for these dudes to come back and just, you know, win it for them, it's like, shit, we want to turn up as a city, but it's going to happen. We're all, you know, getting our legs ready. Everybody's getting vaccinated, hopefully.
That time will come.
Yeah, and we're going to turn up. Mm. Regardless of what happens this year, there's going to be a championship turn up. We may just act like we won this year no matter what happens.
Right. Can you imagine if you do win both of them? Yeah. I mean, like, come on.
I've already warned people, if that happens, unfollow me because it's going to be a lot of hurt feelings. I'm really coming for heads. I've made a list in my head. I'm sure you know people that talk shit. And there's some people that have no business doing it, like blue checks that are people I know. And it's like, do you think I'm not going to, like, I'm 6'7". What did you think was going to happen? I was going to forget? Or I wasn't, I'm just saying, like, are we going to fight? What do you want to do?
Because
there's going to be some heat coming for you. So you might block me now, preemptive, Shannon Sharp, me, just hit me with the block. We can discuss it like gentlemen, whatever. But if they go back to back, yeah, this whole city is, you know.
I may come back for that.
You're more than welcome. I don't know how these Bulls are going to do. I know,
we're not. I'm tired of the Bulls. That's my boys, but I'm not talking about that anymore.
So you can come, you know, be like everybody else, come jump on this Laker bandwagon, like all the former Warriors fans and everybody else. Clippers fans, you know, when it's time, it's time. But we're excited for it.
We're going to get back to UCLA. Explain to me what the shit crew is.
So Shit Crew was a we knew that we were just like the low men on the totem pole. So right. You know, if we're doing drills or whatever, we're doing the unfavorable part of the drill, whether that's playing defense the whole time or whatever's going on.
I've never thought about things like that. Like yeah. The lower end players are probably just doing the defensive stuff. Oh my God. Okay. I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, for sure. But if like coach is mad at you, then you're mad at the squad, then you're going to feel the brunt of it. Now these guys are trying to take out their anger and frustration on you. But also, we got to have fun with that shit too, because you'd be scout team. So I specifically remember I had to be this dude from Columbia. We were playing them in like a preseason game. But all he did was shoot threes. I'm like, and he was like, yo, just shoot threes. So I made like 10 or 12 threes that game. The dudes were getting mad at me. But I'm like, yo, this is my fucking game, dog. Right, I'm not going to get to play. So for us, Shit Crew was kind of just, we were a group of funny-ass dudes that like to crack jokes, like I said, keep the mood light. And for us, it's like you get to that point when you're not playing a lot in the game, it's like, don't fucking put me in with 30 seconds left. Like, you're messing up my stats.
Right, there's
not any way I can really go off or get a bucket here. It's like that one rebound and somebody dribble it out. So the greatest hope is to be that guy and get a little bit of time. But I'm not going to really get no buckets. These dudes aren't going to foul at this point because the game is so out of reach that there's no benefit. So we used to sit on the benches like, yo, don't put me in the game, dog. I know Mark Titus literally has a book on that shit.
Yep.
And that's why I've read Titus's book, I'm like, dude, I love it. Like, everything that, you know, you from team to team, it's the same shit. You show up to these cities, everybody thinks you're good. I remember, like, freshman year, you show up, everybody thinks, oh, you're going to be a star or whatever, and then you don't play, and it's like, oh, you know.
Right.
And next year, it's like whoever the new crop is, they're the one who get that love. But for us, Shit Crew was just kind of, it was a way of life. Like, we used to have a saying, win or lose, no overtime, just because we don't want to sit for 3 hours. So go for the win. Don't be cowards. Try and win this shit. What are we trying to play for OT for and get these extra, you know, we play these national TV games, CBS games, it'd be like 3-minute timeouts. It's like, dude, like, I'm not trying to be here for 3 hours if I'm not going to get no run. Like, this shit is embarrassing. This is just more time for people to clown and, you know, not know what's going on.
Right.
But I'm thankful that we didn't have social at that point because we would have been getting ethered, like, routinely. Like, but we would have fun with the shit. We would do, like, we had this thing during free throws. The movie Major League had come out, so we would, like, bang our legs and do whatever.
Yeah.
But we would just have, like, kind of a lot of shit that Monmouth was doing in recent times. We were getting off, but people didn't recognize. But we had a whole, like, system to communicate Goodfella style where we cover our mouths to say shit to each other. We'd have these elaborate conversations. Or everywhere we went, we would just try and make dudes crack up. So national anthem, whatever was going on, we're just, and all it took was a look sometimes. You could just look at somebody and then they would lose it because whatever was going on. But it was a tight-knit crew, and I'm thankful for those guys. And if it wasn't for that experience, I wouldn't have went on to create Legend of Chamberlain Heights and do some of the other shit I've done in life. So I'm super thankful for that time and those moments.
Let's transition to that, because the Shit Crew is probably the first step in you getting to the Legend of Chamberlain Heights, right?
So with the Shit Crew experience, funny, we're actually going to call Legend of Chamberlain Heights Shit Crew at one point, but you know, we would have had to bleep out one of the letters so it wouldn't have flowed correctly. But those experiences, I think, you know, later on in life, Quinn Hawking, who was my teammate, and myself, and obviously Ike Williams were like the three dudes on the end of the bench that were served as the inspiration for the characters and legends. But just that whole show come into existence. We were doing a bunch of stuff, which I know you can attest to. We were doing a bunch of stuff on YouTube at that point, putting out clips, putting out funny shit. We did like a Kobe LeBron puppet remix deal, made it like super raunchy, but it ended up going viral and got the attention of these two guys that were working in animation. One of them had a company with Tom Werner, a guy by the name of Mike Clements, and other guy by the name of Brad Abelson, who was an animator on The Simpsons. So they reached out. They initially like had this idea for a LeBron show they wanted to do, and they knew we were LeBron fans, but we had to kind of politely tell them, like I love and respect LeBron, but my sense of humor is not really going to, you know, we're going to talk about some fucked up shit you know, he's not really going to be happy about if he's the character. So they were just like, all right, well, what else do you got? So I told them that, you know, hey, we used to sit on the end of the bench at UCLA, fuck around during games, and kind of, you know, legend for us was a term of endearment. So anybody you saw on campus, and for us it was kind of a funny thing, like on our inner circle, but everybody we saw, we call them legend. And it was just like a term of endearment. You see somebody on, it could be a football dude, whoever, a regular frat dude, whatever, like, what up, legend? And that was just how we greeted each other. So from to see that kind of thing turn into a show with characters and a, you know, Jay Farrow and Tiffany Haddish and the cast that we had, Carl Jones, who's, you know, gone on to do some amazing shit, Erykah Badu doing the music for us.
That's insane.
It was just like, holy shit, like, this is a real thing. And I know we aired for 2 seasons, but we got the second season faster than any show at Comedy Central history at that point. Mm. Like, they came to our first table read for the first season, and it was a script that me and Quinn wrote. President of the network's there, everybody's there. We got like 150 people there. We called all our boys, whatever. That was the thing with them. They'd always try and like keep the guest list light. Like, we're hoopers. Like, I'm calling every hooper I fucking know to come check this shit out.
Yeah.
Like, this is like a stunt time. Like, this is like, you get to be a stunner. Like, I can get everybody up here. So we had like 200 people at the table read, but the president's there, a bunch of big wigs from the company. We end up like killing that shit. Everybody just cracking up the whole time. After that, they're like, yeah, we want to order season 2 now. Mm. And just good at going. So to have that experience on the bench and just knowing like my life could have, you know, ended on that UCLA bench and never went anywhere, but to use those experiences to be able to create that show and get 2 seasons out of it, honestly, the experience I wouldn't trade for the world.
So it was on Comedy Central, and they're pretty, they let you do anything. I mean, yeah. South Park just do what they want. Did they give you that same leash? Like, you can just do whatever.
So South Park earned that, you know, when you have 20 plus seasons. I think they were probably like season 18, 19 by the point that we got there. Because we would ask, like, you know, I'm just like, I just saw a dude on South Park, like, shoot himself in the head, then shit himself, and then do whatever. Like, can we, for just, you know, I'll key you in. For the end of the first season, originally, season finale, character Grover hits a free throw to send him to the playoffs. But the episode was supposed to end with him hitting a free throw to send him to the playoffs, and then he ends up shitting himself right on the court. Like, you know what I mean? But, like, he just loses it. So he basically gets knocked down to square one. They saw that, and our animators were very liberal in terms of how they, it was like a good 30-second long, like, shit scene. So I'm even watching it like, dog, we're like 18 seconds over the shit threshold. We're not, they're going to pull this shit. But they ended up like, nah, we can't do that. So they would have situations like that where they're just like, nah, it's too much, too extreme. And we would always try and fuck with them to that point. Like, we would add stuff in the script knowing we wouldn't keep it just to see if we could get a rise out of them. But they let us do a lot of shit, to be honest with you. And I'm super thankful for that. We were basically kind of like the black version of South Park in terms of the topics and the things we got to talk about. So I feel like that show was ahead of its time. It's sad because I'm such kind of a big voice in NBA Twitter now. If I think about it, I had the same following back then. A lot more people would have rocked with it and really roll with it. But that also led me to become the person who I am on social now. So that experience on that show was like my first time. I was managing the social account. After a couple weeks, I talked to him. I'm like, all right, let me jump on this shit and let me just see. Like, I didn't really fuck with social at that point. I didn't really know what was going on. So I just studied a lot of other accounts and how they posted, the type of, you know, just the style and what people thought was funny. So I was able to grow that account to close to like 100,000 followers during my time running it. And it gave me the strength and inspiration to do my own shit. My wife used to tell me back then, like, yo, you gotta, you know, like, one day the show's not gonna be here and you gotta, you have your own shit to show for. And I'm just like, you know, then finally show gets canceled and I start doing my own shit. And she's like, I told you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, make sure, I don't know what your relationship, boo situation, whatever, but always listen to your significant other when they tell you, because they have great perspective.
For sure, yeah. No, for sure, for sure. I think that a lot of people are realizing the same thing that you realize is that it's something natural about being independent, right? No matter who is above you, like, even right now I work with Bleacher Report / House of Highlights, but this endeavor that we're working on right now, this is all independent, and it, my heart is in this more than it is in some of the other stuff, just because this is my baby. So I just want people to realize that, because I feel like some people might realize that a little bit later than they should.
I'm old and washed now. I'm in my LeBron year 18. You know, I've got a couple more years left trying to win a couple more rings, and I'm going to ride off to the sunset. But this is the thing I try and impress on a lot of kids, especially, you know, you've seen it, how big of a business that this social land is. It's not just fun and games anymore. And that's why I pride myself on trying to be as original and unique as possible, because I've seen the grimy side of that. I've seen kind of how some of these kids will come out with this great content, not even realize it. We see it on TikTok. We see it on all these platforms. Yep. And then you see somebody just snatch their shit, and now they're the one who's getting the glory, getting the. And for me, it's like, it's not about like the retweets and likes anymore. It's just like big bag. This is business.
Yeah.
Like, this shit is like, you know, a check now involved. So I just tell a lot of these kids, like, you can really go out there and do this shit. Like, if you look at the way these companies move and operate, and for me, being an independent, I consult and I work with a lot of different companies. Shout out to Wave and Buckets. I'm doing my show Out of Pocket Live with. I work with a lot of spots, but I always make sure to tell them, like, I can't work here full time because I can't have y'all telling me what I can tweet. Like, like, it's funny. I saw some of my greatest growth during the election, because I was able to talk about shit, and I'm just thinking in my head, like, damn, if I work at Bleacher or ESPN or whatever, like, they would have shut this shit down right away. Like,
trust me, I know. You know,
yeah, you can't say that, you can't do this. Like, I've gotten those type of emails before and kind of been on Slacks where that type of shit has happened. So I maintain everybody I work with, like, look, this is me. If y'all like it, great. If y'all have problems with it, that's gonna be on you. That's not anything I'm gonna change about myself. And it's funny, once I stopped needing jobs, that's when I got, like, you know, once you get to that level where you don't need the help,
yeah,
but you also got to appreciate the grind. That's why I have a look, and it's no disrespect to these kids that run these accounts, but they'll run these 6, 7, 8 million follower accounts. It's like, well, if you never got it out the mud, like anybody could post from this shit. Running an 8 million follower account, and we're doing the same numbers. I have 100,000 followers. That should tell you something. Like, anybody could do this shit. Like, but you know, but if you can't do it on your own, and that's why I really respect, there's so many talented ass kids out there, 10, 15,000 followers. I'm always just like, look, I'll pump your shit. Send me what you got. Like, if it, you know, if you liking it's hidden, let me know. I'll amplify it for you. Because I'd rather see you run your numbers up. And with these same people, like, look, when they come to you now, brand sponsors, whoever, get your fucking bag. Like, don't accept just some free merch or whatever. You know, the hustle. You know, as you get that trajectory going, like, oh, we'll send you some free shit. And at first you're like, oh, that's great, I get free shit. Then it's like, nah, I just gave you guys like a million impressions off this post I just put up. And according to my CPM calculator, that's about 5 racks that you owe me. Like, it's not like no free shit anymore. Like, this bottle is like $35. Like, that's that don't really work for me. But you kind of learn that shit as you go. And I think that's what I really try and impress upon a lot of these young kids in the next generation is, like, you can hustle and grind and really do something like you're doing, you know, a million strong. Like, that's for me, like I said, like I watch your videos and I'm just like, you did one the other day with like $15 to and I'm looking at the shit and it's like, this could be a 30-second video. Right? I'm just saying, like, I'm taking bam, 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 bam. You like 20 minutes of just like great ass content, but I'm just like, I'm invested, like, shit. And I'm looking at my watch like, damn, he still got me hooked. But that's what they can realize now. Cause if you go and you try and pitch that to a company or whatever, at first they're not gonna give you no run or rock with you, or they may give you some shit. But if you do it yourself now, learn, and you learn more from, I learn more from the failures. Like the bad shit. Like, I was doing voiceovers at one point because I saw Michi and some other, you know, Savvy and some other cats. And I'm like, damn, this is like a small lane. I did a show. Like, let me try that. Some of them hit, and let's just say some of them did not. Right. Like, that's where I'm getting, like, just ripped apart and cancer wished on my life and death threats. And I'm just like, damn, dog, you didn't like my Luca voiceover? Like, I'm just saying, like, it's not like a death threat type of situation. Like, just tell me you didn't like it and keep it moving. But you learn trial and error, like, getting dragged, going through it. It's kind of like being like a comedian, right? You bomb sometimes on social. Like, you go, you might put some shit and it doesn't hit, but you learn from those moments. And all my friends do stand up. That's kind of my next foray. But they're like, you know, this is a part of the life. Like, you got to go bomb because it makes you stronger. And then you just learn that now these comments don't mean shit to me. I see the pain in people's voices when they're tweeted. It's like, damn, now you just made a fucking burner account just to talk shit to me? Do you think I'm that important? Because that's, I would never do that to me. Like, I would never waste that 15, 20 minutes. You could have doing whatever, but for me it's like, all right, keep going, because I get so much love too. But I don't know about yourself, but I remember the hate more than the love. That's like the fuck, like, I'll get 1,000 like positive, I'll remember like the 2 negatives or
I think
whatever.
I think it's very natural. You know, very natural, especially from creators, because like you said, I just hit a million, but there are some mentions that I get, I'm like, bro, out of the million, this one person said this. So that's why, like, honestly, I stay away from my mentions at all costs. Like, unless it is like the other day, I had a bunch of fans put together a happy 1 million video, which is brought tears to my eyes. So I read the comments on that one, because I'm like, there can't be nobody hating on this, right? It's not even me, it's the people that watch me. I was wrong.
I read every single comment, because I know that's, but I've been on YouTube and these platforms just like 2007, 2008. And back in those days, it was like, you know, this was like the Wild West. They were saying shit about your mom, family, whatever. I mean, it was like before they really had the algorithm to check and kind of report and do all that type of shit. But for me, it just lets me know kind of where my trajectory is. And like I said, I remember everything. So people will come and talk shit. And it's funny to me, I'll see those people flip and they'll go from talking shit to like, oh man, you never miss or whatever. It's like, you're the same motherfucker who wished cancer on me. But at the end of the day, like, for me, it's just a grind and to know where I'm at. And like I said, when you're getting more positive than negative, that's when you know you're doing the good shit. Like, even if it's 60-40 or whatever, like, you got people that rock with you. And you look at somebody like Skip Bayless. Skip is the highest paid, you know, dude in the game, right? And all he does is troll. Like, look at his man. I mean, I look at LeBron's mentions. LeBron will post them like, hey, you got 1,000 scholarships for kids. Like, how come you didn't get 2,000? You asshole? Like, how, you know what I mean? It's like, damn, dog, like, you know, oh, that wasn't good enough. You didn't do this. You didn't do that. You didn't save the world. You got to go save China. Like, this is the shit that these dudes deal with on a daily. So anybody who wants to get in that social space, this is what that world is. Just a lot of fun shit and being on shows like this and doing cool ass shit. But then it's a lot of, like, you know, because those shit stings sometimes. Somebody called me like thumb face or toe face one point. And I told my wife we were cracking up. And now that's like a running thing with it. Because he was like, damn, I do have a kind of a little toe face. Like, shit. I'm just like, that really stung, dog. You really got me. But sometimes it'll make me laugh, and you just have to give it up to the people. Like, yo, that was a good one. Like,
yeah.
That was accurate. I do actually have a face that looks like a dove. Like,
and for the people at home, I mean, we got both worlds, right? You got someone that reads every comment versus somebody that don't read it much, and both can end up successful.
I'm trying to get a mill, so I'm going to stop reading them shit. I'm going to be real. Like, I'm trying to follow your breadcrumbs to your model, because you got that shit figured. Like I said, you had me 20 minutes hooked, and I'm thinking in my head, like, this motherfucker could have read this shit in 30 seconds.
Yep.
I just wanted to know who he picked.
I drop, and I work on the next one. It's like, after that video don't exist to me no more. I'm on to the next one.
And that's a grind that I feel like a lot of people want to get in this space. I see a lot of people that work at these companies. I'll ask them, like, what's your schedule? And they'll tell me time. Just like, you don't work at social.
Mm-mm.
9 to what?
There's no way.
I wake up at 3 in the morning or some shit. I remember when Kawhi went to the Clippers, I was at my wife's crib in Iowa, about to go to sleep, like 11:30, got like the Paul George trade alert. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Mm-hmm. Then the Kawhi hit, I'm like, oh, it's going to be a long night. Like, there's content to be gotten. I can't wait.
Same thing. I was laying in bed when that happened. It happened. I ran to the workroom. I'm like, I gotta film a video. That video ended up being a 1 out of 10, which is like my most viewed video of the last 10. Like, there is no schedule when you're working in this realm at all.
Exactly. You grind and you go, and that's why you be successful. And a lot of people are like, oh man, I put some of it in hits. So to put some other shit up. To your point, like, I might drop some shit. I did a song called AD on the Way when Anthony Davis signed with the Lakers that was using the Ice Cube Good Day beat.
Mm-hmm.
Ice Cube hit it, Shannon Sharp. I mean, all these people, like, but the next day it's like, shit, all right, it's like a drug, man. Those numbers ran up. So I got to get that shit again. Like, whatever I come up with next, got to perform just as well, to the point now where it's like, I get so desensitized by a viral tweet, because it's like, I need to put up more. Like, what else can I say, you know, but without being too thirsty or putting up too much shit and finding that balance? Because then you start over posting and over tweeting, and then it has a reverse effect. But for me, it's like social is like a science and like a game now. It's like any moment we could fucking finish this interview, I could see some shit happen, and it's time I might be doing it on the, I mean, I'm driving safely on the way home. I pull over and get it out. But I've had times where it's like, I got to pull up to get this tweet out. Like, run. This is a ticking time bomb. Like, I gotta get this shit out. Ain't no stopping me when you
know that I called game. Here on Called Game, we're a fan of basketball, sneakers, and trading cards. Are you, I'm guessing you're a sneakerhead, at least to some extent?
I never really got good sneakers as a kid. My dad had a lot of kids, so we had a lot of different hands in the pot. But I've always respected sneakers, and I've definitely been a trading card dude since the 80s.
Word. So we're gonna show you something. We want you to open these and tell me if these bring back any memories, any reactions, or anything.
Let's see what we got in here. Oh, yeah. I think my pops had these joints, to be real with you.
Yep,
the top 10s. Like,
top 10s.
So he hurt his neck when I was a little kid, so I didn't get to see him play as much. So I used to always think he was washed until I started watching highlights in my older life. But knowing he had like a shoe deal and all the stuff, because we'd have these just laying around the crib.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember even wearing them in like junior high. Like, he would have just random shit jerseys. Like, we would wear his Clippers jerseys. We just did a video for his 65th birthday, Duncan. And he's wearing his jersey. But I used to wear that as a kid, and it was snug on me.
So, yeah, for the people at home, the story behind these, Adidas dropped these in the late 70s. And they're called top 10 because they gave it to their top 10 Adidas athletes. And your pops is one of them,
which is
crazy. I mean, this is a silhouette that will live forever. Like, it's one of the premier early stages basketball sneaker. And it lives even to this day in certain portions of the country, like Detroit rock with these heavily.
Really?
I don't really understand why. I mean, I'm not. It's an amazing shoe, of course, but something about Detroit and this sneaker just go hand in hand.
Yeah.
And when I was a kid, I wanted a pair of these, kind of unrelated to the basketball. I just think that the way it looks was fire, you know? So we thought it'd be cool if you unboxed a pair of your pop sneaks. And
this brought back memories. We went back down memory lane with this one. But yeah, knowing it's funny because I think he was one of the first dudes to get like $1 million contract. But it's I got so many brothers and sisters now. It's like, I'm going to be a working man for the rest of my life. But knowing the way, like, Michael Jordan, like, I don't know if you saw the last, I'm sure you did, saw The Last Dance, but he's got the poster at his college dorm. So we're looking at my dad, like, were you really that good? Because, like, I'm giving you buckets now. It's like a 13, 14-year-old. He's got the janky hip. He had, you know, the janky neck, too. But I'm going at him, like, you know, busting his ass in one-on-one. And it's like, you were an NBA player, dog? I don't know if I believe it. But seeing the old tape and seeing the way that dude's, like, he's got this video, like, him blocking Kareem's shot, or him, you know, the way, you know, like, dudes like Bernard King will talk about going up against him and just the battles they had. For me, it's like, yo, this dude was really the shit. Like, wow.
I feel like we always underrate our pops at some extent. Like, my dad's the hardest worker ever. But when I was young, I didn't really think about it like that. You know what I'm saying? But now once I hit adulthood and I see, like, I remember him waking up at 2 a.m. to go to work and then coming back at 5 p.m. I'm like, oh, snap, pops is really about that grind. Yeah. In a few days, we have Matt Barnes and his boys on. And I wonder how they look at their dad, if it's similar to the way, like, NBA fans look at their dad, you know?
I think, you know, growing up with a pops who played in the league, it was tough because that was your normal, right? It was never... You know, it was nothing for us. I remember he finished his career with the Golden State Warriors, and MJ came to town, but we get taken into the locker room to go meet MJ. That wasn't, I'm just saying, I'm not trying to stun or brag, but that was like a normal experience. Like, we're hanging out with Chris Mullin. We live in the same gated community. Like, Chris Mullin, I don't think he had kids at that point. I want to say his wife was pregnant with, like, their first child. This was in, like, 89. But he's taking us to the gym to go get jumpers up. So we're literally in Oracle by ourselves shooting with, you know, shagging rebounds for Chris Mullin. Like, and that's just like, I go back and think now, like, holy shit, like, that was, like, you know, legendary.
That's
like,
big,
this dude, and just to see even the way he, like, talks about my pops, because my pops was a shadow of himself after his neck injury, but to see the way that these dudes, and Don Nelson was coaching the squad at that point, but to see the way these dudes looked at him and revered him and just the respect they had for him, and I'm looking like, they only averaging, like, 6 points a game. Like, you're not the business, dog, but it's an amazing thing. And to know that he had Adidas, literally, you know, was on the roster giving him shoes and That's a legendary thing.
It really is. It really is. Rare Retro, latest release, all on eBay, all backed by the authenticity guarantee. And if you're a seller out there, there is a zero fee for $100 plus sneakers, all on eBay. Shout out to eBay out there.
I just did some shit with eBay, so shout out to eBay as well. Appreciate you guys. I hope that bag is in transit. Don't make me find you.
Time out. Have y'all checked out the new playoff game from our partners at DraftKings yet? You can win up to $10,000 a day every single day during the playoffs. All you have to do is select the answers to the questions like who's going to score the first basket tonight or which team will sink the most threes, and you can tune into the game and see if you win. It's free to enter. All you have to do is hit the link in the description, use the promo code CALLEDGAME, and take your shot.
Yeah, man. So you just told the meet and Michael Jordan part. How old were you when that happened?
So I was like 7 or 8. I mean, I've met Mike a few times. We went out to Santa Barbara when my brother was in college, and my brother played at the Jordan Dome with him. He was on, like, my brother famously tells this story where my brother was a college guy. They just won the national championship. Mike's doing the games up there. My brother ends up being on Mike's team every time he's up there. Mike's like, yo, I want Chris on my squad.
Oh,
my brother was a fucking beast, 6'3".
He probably still telling that story to this day,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Like, Space Jam, like, we've been getting mileage out of this shit, but... Going to that Warner Brothers lot and just seeing it. I remember going there as a kid. My dad would bring me up there every once in a while. But after a game, or after they finished playing for the day, it was Mike, Charles Barkley, and Ken Griffey Jr., like a stack of patent leathers, just like, and, you know, I'm just looking at those, but they're at the poker table, just stacks of hundreds. Like, and it's just a normal thing. Like,
yeah.
I'm looking like, these are like three of the greatest athletes of all time, and they're just talking shit, hanging out.
Man, that's crazy, man. I feel like there's, when I watch The Last Dance, because I actually watched it again on the flight here, which is funny that you even brought The Last Dance up. There are so many people in that, speaking like his rookie season after he got drafted, they're like getting his autographs, and like they had no idea in that moment that they were getting the autograph of the greatest player of all time.
I mean, I would say second greatest. I know you're a Chicago guy.
Oh, see, okay.
Behind all LeBron, right. But... Great,
you know, which is funny. Usually when I talk to, you're a little bit older than I am. Usually when I talk to people that actually got to see Mike, they're like, without a doubt, it is Mike and not LeBron. But you're one of the few people that saw both, and you're like, it is LeBron.
So this is what I had a come to Jesus moment later on in life, because I was thinking about, and this is the thing, we saw 80s basketball. I was born in 82, so I got to see tail end of 80s ball, Magic, all those, beasts. Then MJ, great, but expansion era. They added, like, and I remember just, oh, there's cool new teams popping up, not thinking, like, damn, this league is really getting watered down and the product's getting so devalued. He's still the greatest player in the league at that point, but they added the Magic, the Heat, the Hornets, like, all these squads, and they weren't good, you know, so this is, like, free, easy wins during the season. I think I calculated, like, in his first 2 years against, like, the Heat and whenever those squads came, he was, like, 29-1, including playoffs. I think the Heat made the playoffs, like, their second or third year as a franchise.
Right.
But that would never fly. Like, you couldn't just assemble a team nowadays and guys, you know, could go out there. But no disrespect to MJ, I think it's just a game. And it's what they started with, that 92 Dream Team, all the way through. Some way more dudes hoop now, and they hoop at a high level. So
so you would say that right now we have the greatest talent that we've ever had in the NBA?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think this is the best version of the league that we've ever seen with the guys like KD, LeBron, and we really feel it too when we don't see these guys on the court. It hurts the product. Like guys on,
for sure.
You know, a guy like Klay might be the second, third best player on his team, but he could go somewhere else and
be the guy,
be like Harden, and really just resurrect the whole franchise and, you know, do that type of stuff. So these dudes are just at another level, just the caliber they play with, the style, because they have. It's like my dad, you know, from 70s to 80s, like there's the jump there, 80s and 90s. Now they got more resources, whatever. The league had to expand. Eventually it caught up. But the league hasn't really expanded, I want to say, since like 2003, whatever it is. You know, so now these dudes, they're all battling each other for these spots. And it's so hard to be one of those 430, 450 guys on a roster. But that's no knock to MJ. I do that a lot just to troll. I've kind of, you know, skip back. I got to bring balance to the force for LeBron. But I think when you look at the dude, what MJ was able to accomplish, six championships, six finals MVPs, and those squads, like, you know, those were great moments. Like, the NBA on NBC was fucking some of the best times of my life, just see, you know, getting ready for the Bulls-Knicks game or a Bulls-Pacers game or whatever was going on, to see the way that dude moved and to actually see him in the real world and be able to, like, touch him and, like, you know, look at the high short as he's walking around and doing his thing. It's just like, man. Mike is, I still hold, I talk shit until I see him, and then it's like, okay, you're okay. You might be the GOAT.
Have you met Bron?
I met Bron, I haven't really like formally introduced, but he came and played at UCLA, and I handed him a towel at one point.
All right, okay.
He was playing pickup at UCLA. He walked over to me, I'm like, oh, is this going to be the moment? He's like, you passed me a towel? I'm like, yes, Bron. So hopefully, he actually quote tweeted me the other day. I did this like little thread on a curly-haired Hooper.
I remember that. Yeah.
So that was the first time we ever interacted, which leads me to believe he's got a burner where he's monitoring my shit. But for him to bring it to the main page, it was like, okay, LeBron. After we had, it was funny, we lost to Gonzaga, so I'm at the house ready to cry. And then I check my DMs, and Kyle Long, who used to play with the Bears, DM me like, oh, you got the LeBron quote to you. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Then I look, I'm like, oh, shit, I got the LeBron. So I remember losing and going crazy, but have that bittersweet moment, obviously that squad losing to Gonzaga to go to the national championship game, but then LeBron hitting it was like, all right,
LeBron's been on NBA Twitter a decent amount the last couple weeks. He got your quote tweet, he quoted Mark on the I'm 36 thing, so he's aware of a lot of the stuff going on right now.
And shout out to Mark, that crew, those dudes, that's again, it's another, and I think we're all kind of in the same pot of dudes who are super talented who had to just make our own lane. Like, may have not gotten, I would never got the opportunity to host and do a lot of the shit I'm doing if I didn't run the numbers up and get to where I want to be. But everybody can do that and turn the camera on. To see their trajectory, these dudes always have I get mad because they don't do the finals fucking sketches every, it's like, they do these after every game. Like, just put some shit up. We're going to retweet it. It's going to be great. But to see that, I remember there was a shot of them in the bubble, I think, watching a video that Spectrum had used for like a Lakers backstage promo.
Yep.
And they're both just cracking up. So to see Mark and that crew's trajectory, and they just, you know, I think they just did put up one the other day with LaMelo Ball. Like, these dudes, they, you know,
they
same
don't
thing.
Miss.
Grind. Go hit the Hell Club court, shoot a video. Yep. I appreciate them for having sets and really, like, you know, no matter what they're doing, when they were doing like the text on screen or whatever, you felt like you were there. I felt like I was looking at LeBron scream at J.R. Smith, sent Dwayne Wade packing or whatever was going on. Like, I felt those moments, like these were real things happening.
Yeah. What I like most about Mark and his crew is that it's always Mark and his crew. He won't allow it to be Mark. You know, because I've met those guys plenty of times. Those are the homies. They all play their role. Like, Mark might be the guy, like, that's the main character in a lot of the skits, but they all play their role. Like, Af is behind the camera. You know, he's editing it up. Desmond is doing CGI. Like, it's always RDC world, and he tried to prevent it from being Mark, which is just, it's crazy.
And that's why they're going to be successful. For me, it's always, I kick myself, or I might just ask, like, how come these dudes don't have their own show or no knock to the starters in that group, but the starters were on NBA TV for years. Mm-hmm. Like, if you tell me Mark and them can't do a sketch show, Mark Drewski and a couple other people, and I want to give away free game, but
hey, maybe some stuff you don't know about what's going on behind the scenes.
I mean, this is the thing, because I remember tweeting about this shit like 2-3 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like, how come Mark, and I've tried to pitch sketch shows and shit, I'm like, how come these dudes, because I'll pay, there's no shortage of talent. Just let them do what they do. Let them cook. Like, somebody like yourself, we're working together. You just do what you do. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure you do it. Like, I'm not going to tell you shit. Like, what can I tell you about making high videos? Yeah. Like, I'm just saying, like, you know, you do that for a living. I can be like, hey, maybe try this, try that. Or did you see this happen? Mm-hmm. Would you guys want to make a video about that? Like, but I'm excited. You know what I'm saying? I'm excited for the whole crew and to see. Now they're showing, like, the next generation that of just entertainers and talent that you don't have to do the traditional thing. Like you said before, you can carve your own lane and make your own history. Like, you really control your destiny.
Ain't no stopping me when you know that I called that.
We're going to go back. We talked about some sneakers. We got to get to some cards. You see, we got two boxes here.
Okay.
Now, what we're going to do, I'm going to open up this box. I'm giving you one pack, and I'm keeping a pack for myself.
Okay.
We're going to open. It's four per pack. We have eight players, and we have to build our ideal starting five from those eight players.
Okay, for sure.
I don't have nails, so I'm going to have to go back here for this. I think.
This I didn't realize they were still making regular cards. I thought everything was – I'm trying to figure out what these NFTs are –
Don't even get me started. I have no idea. I couldn't tell you.
Because I'm watching these clips on YouTube. Like, do you want me to just to rip that for you and put it in like a? That, I'm just trying. Which I'll charge you $50,000 for it. That makes you feel.
They're everywhere, man. The NFTs, all of these things are everywhere. Mm-hmm. I can't do it. I'm more of a traditional rip a pack guy.
I need the gum in the pack, really. You know, I miss that feeling. The stale ass gum that lasts 8 seconds.
Okay, let's see who we can potentially put together.
Wow, this has been, I haven't done this in like 20 years. This is beautiful.
What you get over there?
I got John Collins.
Okay.
I got Andre Roberson. Got Jalen LeCue. And Terry Rozier.
Okay, that's two really decent players, and then Terry Rozier's having a great season. I got Klay Thompson to start off with.
Oh, we're good.
I got John Wall.
Oh.
I got John Stockton. My pack is killing your pack, by the way.
I didn't realize we were they had former guys on there too.
Yeah, I didn't either. And then lastly, we got Jahlil Okafor. So we got some hits here. I'm guessing we're agreeing on starting either John, one of the Johns, John Wall or John Stockton.
Ooh, I think we got to go Stockton.
We got to go Stockton, right? All time leading steals and assists. Okay, Stockton at the one.
Ooh.
Who do you have over there? Who was your two? Because you had John Collins and one
John
of them.
I got John Collins for you, and I got Terry Rozier. Other
okay.
Than that, if we need somebody to miss a free throw.
Terry Rozier's been running a lot of two this season with LaMelo Ball and Vonte Graham. So maybe we put Terry at the two.
I'm with it.
And then we got at the three, Klay. You know, Klay's versatile. We can run that. John Collins at the four.
Yeah, I'm with it.
And I guess you're rocking with Jahlil Okafor.
Hey, you got it. Rebound.
He'll
outlet. Rebound. That's it.
Give him some post touches. He'll be effective. So we got John Stockton, Terry Rozier, Klay Thompson, John Collins, and Jahlil Okafor. That's not a bad starting five.
That team is winning 50 plus.
Yeah, we'll
games
be a playoff team for sure.
In either conference.
Yeah, we'll be a playoff team. You
Klay
know?
MVP. Finals MVP.
And we got John Stockton that's going to find everybody, too. Klay Thompson off those screens with John Stockton passing to him. Come on, man.
Klay's probably averaging 45 points a
for
game
sure.
With that.
And then the lob threat in John Collins. I see John Stockton may not have thrown a lot of lobs in his career because he had old man Karl Malone.
Yeah.
But some lobs up in there.
You had to hit Oster Tag at least one. You hit a Greg Foster off.
That 3-inch vertical. He'll get up there.
He might come down with it, then go back up, but...
You can collect with confidence on eBay. They have the largest collection of trading cards in the world with new box drops and hard-to-find cards. It's really a one-stop shop for trading card buyers and collectors. Check out the description for more of what eBay is rolling out. So the thing that we ask every guest last, the name of the show is called Game, you know, buzzer beater, boom, game over. Game is on the line. Who are you passing the ball to call Game?
I'm going to give the ball to Kobe Bean Bryant because he's going to get a bucket.
Mm.
Kobe loved getting buckets. Yeah. He loved making especially if there's like four dudes on him because he's going to throw some shit up and it's going to find its way in the basket.
Always.
And that's no disrespect to Mike, who also could get it going too. And no disrespect to Bron, but Bron is more of a facilitator. He'll take the shot if he has to,
mm-hmm.
but he's kind of got a bad rap for that. But yeah, if I need a bucket, you got to go to Kobe to call Game.
Yep.
Because he's not going to allow it. Kobe or Magic. I'll say Magic. I played a lot of pickup with Magic. Magic will just, if it's a pickup, he's going to call the foul. So he's going to just do it until he makes the shot. But. In a game, I got to go with Kobe.
Okay. See, we've had a few people on the show. Kobe is a go-to all the time. Everybody knows that Kobe is a guy to get a ball to. We haven't heard Magic yet, though.
Magic would get a bucket. I mean, the hook, he had to play the five. Like, yep. Magic came through really stunning, and he's just a hero of mine. So I love anytime. I mean, look, I remember 91, but seeing Magic now, everything he's been through, literally healthier than all of us. Like, Magic is that dude. He took a stigma, really turned it on his ass, and really made the world kind of understand and take note. And to see what he's done as a businessman, just a human being, man, like, I gotta rock with Magic.
So we just had Josiah Johnson onto the show, and you know how we do it. We have to ask him, with the game on the line, who did he want to give the ball to call Game? Now, Josiah is an LA boy at heart, and his picks reflect that. Starting off with the all-time leading vote-getter in this category, Kobe Bean Bryant. The KB initial fits so great.
You know, I can tell you that from experience. And the last guy he gave us was an underrated pick, another Laker legend, and that is MJ. Of course not Michael Jordan, but Magic Johnson. I feel like him being 6'9", you can give him the ball here on the block. Maybe he... I was born in 96. I didn't get to see Magic Johnson play, so I'm being honest with you. But these were Josiah's picks for who he wanted to call game.
I feel that. I feel that. I like the Magic burner account, too. Yeah. I know you know about it.
I got, there's so many burner accounts popping up. I always DM those dudes like, fuck, there's like a Dolan one. I'll just always hit these dudes like, you motherfuckers are hilarious, dog. Like, how you have this shit ready to go? And I always, there's like Literal Larry's another one that I've seen. But I remember Literal Larry, I saw him, we had like 8,000-9,000 followers. I'm like, yo, this is gonna be a 100,000 follower account.
Yeah.
Just stay consistent, keep grinding. Make sure you know the voice of the page that you're using. Don't try to change. But him, Magic's burner. I wonder who these dudes are. And it's funny, like, you know, so many dudes out there that are behind these abs, then you meet them, it's like, these dudes are fucking legends, bro. They're from all over the country, but they just grind, and that's what I love to see on social.
All right, we appreciate y'all at home for watching this episode of Call Game. Be sure to like, subscribe, follow Josiah on all socials. That'll be in the description as well. You got anything else to say to the people at home?
No, thank you. God bless you for having me on, man. I appreciate you.
All right, and we out. Peace.